this generation's wisdom is being spun in concert with technology. The internet is our version of splitting the atom. It holds immense powers, both perilous and promising, as it upends the meaning of ancient, elemental things like making and leading and belonging and learning. We know ourselves not only to be connecting to others beyond kin and tribe. We have the means and the freedom to create our own tribes, bound by passion and service, quite apart from bloodline or geography. So is the story of Maria Popova's internet phenomenon, Brain Pickings.
Right now, I rarely read the internet at all, and I spend most of my days sort of buried in book piles and letters and diaries and old philosophy books and whatnot. But, you know, there's this term that we hear in kind of New Agey circles, spiritual reparenting, which is a bit too New Agey even for my taste, and I can be quite the hippie sometimes. but there's an aspect of it that I like, and it led me to think about what I do as a kind of two-way generational reparenting, sort of on the one hand caring for these bygone thinkers, while at the same time imbuing the present generation with their hand-me-down wisdom and their most enduring ideas.
This is Becoming Wise, an inquiry into the mystery and the art of living. I'm Krista Tippett. I think Maria's Central European background gives her an audacious, somewhat un-American faith in the power of ideas. And somehow she manages to use technological tools in service of old-fashioned wisdom. When I speak with Maria at the age of 30, she's already been at this for a decade. Brain Pickings is a labor of love with a vast following now, and it points at technology's redemptive potentials. She, like Brené Brown, has stumbled on a robust vocabulary of hope while pursuing seemingly unrelated questions. I think the magnetism of your work, the appeal of it for people, that it's aspirational, right? I mean, and which is another contrast to disruptive. We have all these assumptions we kind of walk around with and lay them, especially over, you know, the new generations, that there's no place for depth, that we can only take things in bite-sized pieces, that everything has to be entertaining. And yet you present this discovery to people that we wanted to know more about big ideas, that we want our brains to be stretched. You know, I do feel that there's a real quality in you as a human being which comes through in your work of, and this is how it came to me when I was trying to put into words, you know, intellectual confidence and generosity. Do you think there's a philosophy in you about that, that, you know, of course, you will refine throughout your life?
Well, there are certain core beliefs, I guess, that, let's go with that. I mean, you know, I think a lot about this relationship between cynicism and hope. Mm-hmm. And critical thinking without hope is cynicism, but hope without critical thinking is naivete. And I try to live in this place between the two to try to build a life there, you know, because finding fault and feeling hopeless about improving our situation produces resignation, of which cynicism is a symptom and against which it is this sort of futile self-protection mechanism. Yeah. But on the other hand, believing blindly that everything will work out just fine also produces a kind of resignation because we have no motive to apply ourselves toward making things better. And I think in order to survive, both as individuals and as a civilization, but especially in order to thrive, we need to bridge critical thinking with hope.
You often talk about one of the things you're looking for in content for Brain Pickings is something that contains both timeliness and timelessness.
I think journalism has all these concentric circles within it.
Yeah.
We've come to conflate journalism with news. And so much of that culture deals with what is urgent right now and not what is important in the grand scheme of things, you know? And there's this sort of time bias or presentism bias that happens.
Mm, presentism, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Which is in part because of the way that the internet is structured. So when you think about anything from a Twitter feed or a Facebook feed to a news website, the most recent floats to the top always, and it's always in reverse chronology. And I think that's conditioning us to believe rather falsely that the most recent is the most important,
yeah,
and that the older matters less or just exists less, to a point where we really have come to believe that things that are not on Google or on the news either never happened,
right,
never,
right,
existed, or don't matter. Yeah. But I would say probably 99% of the record of human thought is off the internet and from the history of humanity, you know? And so I think the internet is, its beauty is that it's a self-perfecting organism, right?
Mm.
But as long as it's an ad-supported medium, the motive will be to perfect commercial interest, to perfect the art of the listicle, the endless slideshow, the infinitely paginated article, and not to perfect the human spirit of the reader or the writer.
You know, you and the literary jukebox, you quoted Anne Lamott, she's actually talking about something Emily Dickinson said, that
mm-hmm,
hope inspires the good to reveal itself.
Mm.
You know, when you said a minute ago that the internet is a self-perfecting organism, and that you use some language about there are values and details built into the way we've designed that work against the perfection of the human spirit as a primary drive. But do you have hope and confidence in the internet, in our technology, as a place where, I mean, perfection is a big word, but where the human spirit can be cultivated and deepened? That's not language people often use when they're speaking of our lives with technology.
Well, the thing to keep in mind is that this is such a young medium,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We have not even had a full generation live and die with it. And I think, like any territory to which we bring the pioneer spirit is bound to have both the good and the evil. And we're not going to know how it turns out until much, much, much later. But in the meantime, the decisions we make, the microscopic decisions that we make daily, shape it. And I'm not so foolish as to make predictions, but I can tell you my hope, which is that I do think that people will come to rebel against the things that just don't work for us spiritually, intellectually, creatively. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this to some degree. And I think the younger generations, and I don't mean this by age, but I mean people who are sort of more recently coming onto the scene of,
right,
the internet, are more willing to, for example, pay for ad-free versions of publications, or to limit what they engage with and recognize that actually it takes time and thought and effort and resources to produce a publication that is nourishing as opposed to a cat listicle.
Mm-hmm.
And to make decisions according to how something makes you feel in the end and what kind of contribution it's making to, you know, to use Vannevar Bush's word again, the common record.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to an interview with Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia,
mm-hmm.
And he said that people contribute to Wikipedia for free because they want to do something useful with their time. And yes, I agree. I think people hunger to do something useful with their time in our age of kind of uselessness, you know, time uselessly spent, but also something ennobling with their time. This can't quite be quantified. You know, there's no utilitarian value to it the way that there is with usefulness. But I deeply believe that people want to be good, that more than that, we want to be better, to grow, to ennoble our souls. And we never see the world exactly as it is because we are how the world is. You know, I think it was William James who said, my experience is what I agree to attend to, and only those things which I notice shape my mind. And so in choosing how we are in the world, we shape our experience of that world, our contribution to it. We shape our world, our inner world, our outer world, which is really the only one we'll ever know. And to me, that's the substance of the spiritual journey. And that's not an exasperating idea, but an infinitely emboldening one. And it's taken me many years to come to that without resistance.
You can explore and subscribe to Maria Popova's lovingly curated catalog of wisdom at brainpickings.org. Becoming Wise is an inquiry into the mystery and art of living, and now it's a book. Find more at onbeing.org/becomingwise.